Welcome to the Student of the Game Fire Podcast with your host, Danny B. Today's guest is Franco Martinez, 31 years of combination experience, a captain for Company 2 Tacoma Park with Montgomery County Fire Rescue in Maryland. Franco wasn't seeking the fire service at first. It was a friend who essentially put him on and asked him to come by and see what it was about. Once he did, the smell of the bay and gear had Franco hooked, and that's all he needed. While in the military, the road of law enforcement was presented, but Franco knew the fire service was calling him. One of the quotes Franco dropped during his interview that definitely resounded with me was, "When was the last time you practiced that skill?" With that, I present Franco Martinez.
Franco Martinez. I'm a captain for Montgomery County Fire Rescue. Been with the department for about 25 years, or working on my 25th year with Montgomery County. Started out as a volunteer, I'm sure like most of us probably have at some point. Started as a volunteer in Hazel Township Fire and Rescue in Pennsylvania, Northeast PA. Started in 94, and that's where I got my kind of initial taste for it. And honestly, it was just, I was at school with a buddy of mine, and he was volunteering there. He's like, "Hey man, you know, why don't you come by the firehouse?" And I knew nothing about the fire service. And he's like, "Hey, why don't you just come by and check it out?" And I was like, "Okay, cool, sure." Went by, and he showed me around, saw, you know, the big fire trucks and guys kind of hanging out there. And, you know, I still remember the smells and the sounds and, you know, just the excitement of being there. And I was hooked. I was hooked. And just wanted to spend every waking moment there and just be a part of the guys and that camaraderie. And yeah, I was almost hooked almost immediately, for sure.
Okay. So you get on, you start as a volunteer. At what point during your volunteer time did you realize, I can go do this, like, paid career-wise? Did somebody introduce you to that, or is that something you kind of sought out after?
Yeah, it was always it was like the golden ticket. It felt far away, but guys, you know, always talked about it, you know, New York City or Philly. It was always one of those one in a million ticket to maybe one day. But it was always in the back of my mind, like, gosh, I wonder if I can do this, you know, for the rest of my life. But it still felt very, still felt like a dream, like maybe an unattainable, but still wanted to keep working at it. And, you know, I just kept chugging away. I wanted to keep taking training classes, as a volunteer. I actually, at one point I was going to, towards the end of high school, I had applied for the Air Force. I was trying to do like Air Force firefighting. One of my best friends, actually, his name's Mike Mateo. He's, works on Hazmat One in New York City now. Known him since kindergarten, and he was going through the Air Force trajectory as well. And so I was trying I thought maybe that was my best chance of like being a veteran and going the military route, maybe being a firefighter. Towards the end, they actually fell apart, and they ended up changing my job title through the Air Force. And so I actually ended up withdrawing because, you know, they were trying to get me into like military police. I was like, no, I want to be a firefighter. That's all I want to do. And they're like, "Oh, we'll give you bonus money or whatever." And I was like, no, I want to do this firefighting. And so withdrew last minute from there, and then just started applying everywhere. Started applying in the D.C. area. My brother at the time was going to American University. I had family. So I grew up in Paterson, New Jersey, although most of my upbringing was in Northeast PA. So I remember as a little kid seeing the skyline of New York City. And I still have a lot of family up in and around New York City. So, you know, I applied in New York City. I applied anywhere I could, trying to, and I was still going to school, to college. I was working third shift at 911 center, Luzerne County 911 center in Northeast PA. So I was, going to school, third shift 911 center, and then trying to apply wherever I could, just trying to get my foot in the door. I applied for Alexandria, Prince George's County, Montgomery County, obviously, all over, and just waiting on phone calls, waiting for that golden ticket, trying to get, taking training as much as I could. And Montgomery County just happened to call first, started going through the process, and how I ended up with Montgomery County. But again, DC was one of the, high on my priority list to try to get in and around of.
Okay. So you get the call. Montgomery County wants you. You go through the process. What was your cadet or rookie school like with Montgomery?
It was like a 6 month academy. And by the way, when I got the phone call, I was actually also in medic school as well at the time, because I was like, man, what do I need to do to try to get a leg up, medic school or military? I was just trying anything I could. And I still remember the moment. I was in doing like internship with a medic unit in Hazleton City. I was at Hazleton General Hospital. Again, I clear as day. Because it was such an important moment for me, in the parking lot, and getting that phone call from Montgomery County saying, "Hey, we are giving you a conditional offer in employment," and it just was just amazing. It was amazing. It was so exciting. I was so thrilled. It was just one of those moments in my life where I was like, "My God, I just won the Super Bowl." So I was all in. I was so excited. Went to 6 month academy. It was pretty brutal at the time. It definitely was not. I don't know. I guess fire service now says, calmer, gentler. I don't know. I remember getting screamed at a lot. I remember, but it also I do re also remember. I can look back now and say I'm glad I went through that in that way, because I think anything we do in life, if it's a struggle. And you get to overcome it. It just means more in a lot of ways. But yeah, it was boot camp style, hard, a lot of running, 6 mile runs, and it was tough. Got through it. Looking back now, because I teach at our training academy now, and looking back now, a lot of shortfalls in the stuff that we were doing and the trainings that we were doing, that I'm glad I'm able to look retrospect back and think about the stuff that we're currently teaching, and man, we so much better, so much more, a lot more training that we're doing, leaps and bounds again from just 25 years ago. So glad that at least in that perspective, from the training perspective, we are we're getting better every day. So that's good.
Right. And I think one of the most important things that you mentioned was like how they did it back then, because I kind of had the same thing, the yelling and the boot camp style type training. But I think back then, looking back at it now, that's the way it was done. You know what I mean? But fast forward to now with new recruits and new cadets coming through, I look at that differently. Like there, to me, I don't need to yell unless somebody's going to do something that's going to physically get somebody hurt. Yes, you can yell, but now I'm just like, no. I just talk to them like they're human beings, and then if I let them know, hey, you can improve on this, you can tweak this or whatever. But as far as like getting up in your face and yep, like I yeah, no.
Yeah, and what's funny is I actually completely agree now, but that's all. As I've been an instructor, I've been teaching one way or another since 2001, and who I was as an instructor then is not who I am as an instructor now. Like, actually, I cringe sometimes, but you emulate what you think you or what people before you, right? So you're emulating what you've seen, or you emulate, what you thought your instructor, good instructors were. And I certainly would say that at that time, I was just emulating what other instructors were doing. So like I was at that time, I was probably being the dick and yelling and whatever, and but had no rhyme or reason. And so evolving, and then you start taking classes outside of the organization, and you start really changing the way you come at people to make sure that they're actually learning something. It's not just about screaming and yelling. And so it's funny you say that. I believe that 100%, where if they hear me yelling, it's probably because somebody's about to hurt themselves
Right.
or hurt someone else. And I think that if you yell all the time, it just becomes noise, and they don't hear what it is that you're saying. So you really got to pick and choose when you highlight those moments, because most of the time, I want to be I want to motivate. I want to make it upbeat and lively, and I want it be, like you said, you want to be able to talk to them. You want them to be able to understand what it is that you're saying. And so I've definitely evolved for sure as an instructor, and I benefit. You had mentioned maybe before we got on the air about how you started taking classes and conferences, and I started doing that in like the 2009. I started going outside my organization because there was a lot of stuff that we weren't teaching, and a lot of classes that weren't available to us to expand what we knew. So I started taking all these classes and being able to see other instructors and how they taught things, and the subtleties that they would say, or how they would say it, or their body mechanics, or how they came off, and started formulating who I was as an instructor. One of those folks, Aaron Fields, I took it. Obviously not a nozzle forward. Aaron Fields, one of the best classes I've ever taken. And I love truck work, and your guys probably chuckle if they hear this, but still to this day, Aaron Fields and nozzle forward was one of the best classes I've ever taken. The way he taught it, the way he motivated, really was impactful for me as an instructor. I think I took his class in like 2012 or 13. That shaped me as well. And who we are is who we, who are we find ourselves around. So I was, lucky to be around, eventually being around some really solid instructors, and see how they come off, and see how they teach, and make you better at teaching as well.
No, that's definitely a fact. I mean, that man has a way with words, how he instructs, like the things he talks about. Like, I remember when I took his class, I felt dumb. I was like, I feel dumb around this guy. Like the just how he uses the words, and then he gets you to think, and I'm just like, damn, like, yeah, that's right. That's right. But
It 100%. I couldn't agree more. And such a humbling guy as well. And so, I same thing. I've tried to stay humble no matter how many years I got on, trying to stay humble. I truly believe when I say this, and I'm sure you heard it, a thousand times before. Have no special talents. I'm only pa passionately curious, because I truly, truly feel that way. And I think that's multi-tiered, in that, by saying that, you acknowledge that you don't know everything. But one thing that I can definitely say is I've always been passionately curious about, truck work, for instance, or being a better instructor, and trying to find a better way, or learning more. And I think by doing that, you'll always be growing. You'll always try to get better, and always trying to do better than what you did yesterday.
No, it's a fact. It's a fact. Okay. So 6 months goes through. You obviously graduate. Where was your first assignment?
I was first assigned to Silver Spring, Maryland, an urban area. Station 19, which I was lucky enough to be at an engine tower only house. We have when we get out into the field, sometimes you get to a place that has an ambulance, and as a rookie, you spend most of the time on the ambulance. I was definitely blessed to be able to get to an engine tower house. So my rookie year, I had the time of my life being on an engine. And, they throw me over the tower every once in a while. Of course, again, thinking back, like I knew nothing about truck work. And I always wonder, oh, why don't they just let me go over there? It's not that, can't be that complicated. Again, I think back, I'm like, holy moly, the things that I should have known. But yeah, so that was my first 6 months of probie school was at Station 19, in basically a high-rise urban area. And then after probie school, my first official assignment as a firefighter was Company 2 in Tacoma Park as a firefighter. And again, full circle, almost 25 years later, I'm now the captain of Company 2 in Tacoma Park, Company 2 on the B shift with a great group, bunch of guys, young, motivated guys. Having a great time there, but very crazy to think where you started so many years ago is now you're the captain of the company. So yeah, I'm in Tacoma Park as a captain now, but and certainly several stations and assignments in between there.
So at what point in your career did you notice, like, hey, there's outside training being, available to members not within Montgomery? Like, did somebody put you onto that, or is that something you sought out after?
So I felt that I was missing a big chunk of training. And I felt that a lot of times it was focused on like engine work, and we did not have a good pathway or classes to teach truck work. We didn't have when I started, we did not have a truck company operations class. So when I got my engine status in Tacoma Park, they had a there was a tiller truck there at the time, and I slowly was starting to start training on this tiller truck. It was a 1984 Seagrave tiller truck, but again, it's hard to do truck company training, because you need to like a lot of times you need to break stuff, and forcible entry doors really was still in its infancy. I don't think there was many out there, so it was like where can we cut? How can we cut things? How can we break things? And where can we search aside from this firehouse over and over again? Like I was trying to figure out all these things that I didn't know, and I knew that there was a void for sure of what I wanted to know, and there just wasn't a clear pathway in Montgomery County in the training programs that we had that offered anything like that. So as the years went by, I ended up I got promoted to what's basically probably a lot of people might know as a technician. We call them a master firefighter. So I got promoted really early in my career as a master firefighter, and eventually I found myself on a truck company in Bethesda. So I was the primary truck driver in Bethesda, which is another urban high-rise district. And I remember as I was as I when I got turned over on the truck company, again, it was just basic stuff like knowing your truck company, knowing the tools, but really the good theory and tactics of it was still missing. And I remember feeling like a lot of anxiety when I was first on this because again, our department did not have a clear pathway or class that you can take. Hey, take this class and you'll be able to search better, or you'll be able to force doors better. We did not have that. It was like in training school, here's a force on the door, you have 45 minutes, and there's like eight of us are force the door once. Okay, we got to move on. Like we did not, I'm embarrassed to say it, but I'll certainly say it that, when I first got on the truck, I could not force a door very well. And I didn't know that the all the everything that you really need to know, and that's when it I was like, man, I need to find a way to go somewhere to learn this stuff. I am now the guy that should know this. You were talking about like rusty squad work, like these guys are like SEAL Team 6. If there's anyone that needs to know, it's them, right? So same thing with the truck. And so like I started finding training outside of Montgomery County. I'd go to FDIC for many years. I went to FDIC, took a lot of their hot training classes. That's when I started being able to take classes with a lot of big names out there. And I started taking like RIT classes and truck company operations classes and search classes. And every year I'd go out there. If I wasn't going out there, I'd go to like Firehouse Expo when they do their hot training classes. I'd go to the West Coast. And of course, it was a lot easier at the time. I didn't have kids, and it was just me and my wife. But I remember telling her, I was like, this is really important. Like, I need to, if I'm going to do this, and that's just who I've always been. I'm like, anything I'm doing, if I'm going to do, I might as well try to be the best at it, but also be humble to feel like I will never get there, but it will always fucking drive me to try to be better and try to, in for the pursuit of perfection, knowing that you'll never get there. And so I was just feeding my brain and trying to go in different classes. And some of the best classes I've taken were the ones where I like, after the class, I was beat. I was sore. I burned through holes in my knees from the amount of searching I did. And it was awesome. Like I started feeding the body with all this stuff. And I'd come back to Montgomery County. I'd start guys that I'd be around. I'd start like we'd have these discussions, and that's how you start getting better from within. You come in with different tactics or trainings, and you share that, and you start making your own company better. So that's kind of how I started growing. And it was my recognition of like, man, I don't know what I need to know. And that's when I started taking a lot more courses and training and trying to be perfect myself. I was teaching more at the training academy, and Dave Braun, which is a lieutenant with us, a good dude. He was one of my firefighters when I was a truck driver. He said, yeah, being an instructor is almost like having a cheat code, because I mean, you get to see these basic skills over and over again. You have to break these skills down differently and to really know it, to be able to really teach it. And 100% being an instructor has made me a better firefighter in my career, hands down, because the repetition, doing it over and over again. I've been teaching recruits for years now. And just that basic training, as I'm teaching them, I want to throw, and they usually have me throw ladders or force bond tree during recruit school. That's kind of where they have my pathway, and I'm throwing ladders with them, and I'm engaged with them. And hey, let's see how fast we can do this. And man, that makes me better. That makes my skill set better. So yeah, that's made me better. From Bethesda. When I was a truck driver, and this is where, still to this day, one of the best assignments I've ever had. When I went from Bethesda to Silver Spring on Truck 16, I was the truck driver of Truck 16, which, in my opinion, is the best truck company in our department. Sees a lot of work, a great company. Guys that are there want to be there. It is like, and for me, it's like the primo station that always guys that are hard chargers want to be there, want to train, want to go to work, or run into the rigs. And that's really where I got spent an awesome time, and that's where I was taking class and coming back, and we do trainings, and we that's where I feel like I was able to really craft, starting to really feel and craft truck company work. It's a beautiful thing when you start getting to a place where things around you really slow down, going to fires and things like that. Like everything, you feel like you're just always one step ahead because you keep doing it. And that's where that definitely was a time where things were slowing down. I was like, man, I started really feeling where I was, getting my hands around truck work, and that's where I cut my teeth and got hopefully better at that trade.
In your opinion, how vital, how important is outside training, getting outside of your department?
Huge. Especially if there's no pathway within your organization. And honestly, even if there is, and there's, good training class within your organization, a lot of time you don't know what you don't know. And when you get out to these other training classes, you just see things differently or from a different perspective or from a different angle that you might not otherwise, just a fresh set of eyes on certain skills. Fresh set of eyes, a different perspective from different people is, I think, was incredibly helpful to me. And to be able to come back and sure, at some point we'll talk, but we have a now a truck company operations class, something that I wish I had when I first started it, that now I've been blessed to be able to lead and to put together and run through a class that will make better. Truck drivers make better searches and things like that. But it all started really from going out and seeing other people and seeing how other people taught certain things. A lot of times, shouldn't say a lot of times, but there was times I'd take other training classes outside and some of the stuff I might have already seen. But you know what? If the worst thing to happen, even if I was like, oh, I kind of know this, I've seen this. If the worst thing that happened was that I just got to practice again, then great. Or maybe I just got one thing out of a bunch of things that they taught. That's great. It's coincidental because I'm currently leading a truck company operations class in our
Wow.
department, and it's the third class we've run. The inaugural class that we started was last March, and it was after years and years of me just being a pain in the ass to a lot of the chiefs and the organization. Like, this is important. This is important. We need to do this. These guys don't have an outlet to force a door or to practice searches and just pain in the ass over the years. And finally, they're like, all right, let's do this. And we finally did it. So it's coincidental we're having this conversation because just 2 days ago, so his name's Keith Stakes. He is works for with UL firefighter. Gosh, I'm going to butcher it. UL's they do a lot of the like flow path
Okay.
and
Fire Service Research Institute.
yeah, I think that yep, I think that's what it is. Great guy, known him for years. He's also a chief for Bethesda Chevy Chase Rescue Squad, but his full-time job is with UL. And so I bring him in to teach a couple hours of classroom during truck operations because they have a great amount of resource online websites on their website that that they were the ones that like first start researching on like vertical ventilation and that's where they build houses within structures and they burn them and they say okay, oh, how does this actually all work? That's when they first started talking about flow paths. And so anyway, they did a study on search and rescue within the past year. And so I bring him in and to go over the latest research on search and rescue and to talk to these guys about really trying to apply the most up-to-date data and research so it can make an immediate impact. So like, they're seeing it firsthand, real data, and then we go to the training ground, an hour later, and then they're adding that as they're practicing first floor VES or second floor VES or making sure their head's down as you're dragging victims and how critical that can be, and Keith being able to talk about the huge impacts of having a victim's head in the 1 floor off or 1 foot off the floor versus 3 feet and how much of a greater impact that could be on their survivability. And all those things. But he had mentioned something specifically, and I actually just was talking to him yesterday. I'm like, man, you said something that like really hit because he was talking about how they sent out all these they reached out to departments all over the nation because they wanted to have some time to task numbers, like, hey, how long did it take you to do X? How long did it take you to throw a ladder? How long did it take you to search? How long did it take you to force a door? Because then they would take these numbers, they average them out, and then they put it into their formulas as they're trying to come up with this data. So it's not just arbitrary. Oh, I think that's how somebody within UL just force a door. And no, they've got like real data from different organizations, different departments, and they came up with some numbers. And it was something impactful that he said yesterday, where he's like, "Listen, of all the things that we did, and all the numbers that we got, and taking into account how much time you had on the job, whether you had a 2 years on a job or 20 years on a job, or your age, or whether you're fat, or whether you're skinny, whether you're fit, or whether you were, out of shape." He's like, the most important, out of all the numbers that we saw, what mattered the most impactful out of all of it was, when was the last time you did it? When was the last time you practiced it? That was the main difference of how many, reps did you actually have, and how often did you do it, that actually impacted how fast a skill was actually done. So it goes to the point of, like, being able to do reps over and over again really matters over and over. And the guys that have been in for 25 years and think they can sit on a recliner because, "Hey, I already did it. I already know how to throw a ladder." Do you? Like, do you really know how to throw a ladder fast and quickly when shit's hitting the fan and somebody's hanging from a window? Can you really do it smooth like butter and throw it flawlessly? Even to this day, like, I throw ladders all the time. I really enjoy throwing ladders because I want it. It's a craft that can quickly rust unless you're doing it all the time. So, it emphasizes the point. And for anyone that really loves this job, and people that really know, you're only as good as your last fire, and you're only as good as the last time you actually practiced it. So you have to do that all the time. Because truck and body operations class is still new, something that I helped develop. So I'm training other instructors up on teaching the class and the skills. Like, we're doing forceful entry and confined, forceful entry, making a challenge, vision obscured. We're doing 7-on-8 cuts, flat roof operations, Milwaukee cuts. We're doing a lot of search techniques and all these things that we're cutting. We're doing plunge cuts and shaving carriage bolts off doors to defeat drop bars, like all these things that trying to train instructors up. So a couple of weeks ago, we were doing like a, well, it was basically like a train the trainer, like a skill session for instructors. I'm like, "Hey, let's come together. Let's go over the skills. So when we're teaching the skills with the students, we're all on the same page." And so we got to go to each station of what we teach in class. And I've mentioned this before to the guys. As I was going through with a bunch of other instructors, like, man, I was giddy. Like, I wanted to go through the freaking window. You know what I mean? Like, I wanted to practice my mask up time and time to task and how long that should take. It should, hopefully you're shooting for under 20 seconds to put your face piece on. But it's such a basic skill, but can you do it quickly? So even me, the old, crazy as it sounds, the old guy that with almost 25 years, like, I wanted to be the first one through the window and practice my, like, when was the last time that you practiced just your transition from a ladder into a window and then back out? Like, all those small little things that you don't really think about, that really matter, and only gets better if you're actually doing those things. Like, not just throwing the ladder, but, "Hey, how about my transition in and out? How does that work, and how can I make that better?" So yeah, again, just emphasizing the point of, like, no matter how long you've been in this game, man, you got to get after it every day if you really care, and if you really want to make yourself better, and if you want to be, like, really good at your job.
At what point in your career, what occurred or what triggered that switch for you to go, I'm gonna take the test to see if I'm ready for company officer and why?
I did not want to take the test. I for years, and I passed up promotional exams for years because I loved being a truck driver. That was my jam. I loved it. Every day, like, I had a smile on my face coming to work. Like, I was giddy. I was dr driving one of the I was driving in my mind, I was driving the best truck company in the department, Tiller Truck. We had It's a rescue truck, so we had extrication equipment on there. So, we were busy. We were doing it all. Like, we weren't running fires, we were running pin jobs, or we were always running something. There was always something to keep me busy. Because I know, a lot of people were like, "Oh, you don't want to stay stagnant and kind of just like turn into this blah." But I also wanted to like refine myself over and over again. So I never in my eyes, like I was a master firefighter technician for I don't know, 15 years or something like that. But I really felt that in all that time, I used the best of my, I used every day to improve myself. So I never necessarily felt like I was stagnant because there was always something to improve. Like every morning, I check out the truck, and again, people might think this is crazy, but I was trying to get into the minutia of certain things that you wouldn't necessarily think you had to practice. Like every day, I'd make sure I had my bunker pants on when I was checking out the aerial, and I would just sprint up the aerial and sprint back down. Because, like, for people that don't do that often, like, try to sprint up the aerial and you're going to fall on your face. Like, you're going to trip over your legs, right? Because incorporate the boots and then the pockets and the things that are in there, And I would just think, man, if there's somebody, at a balcony, like, I don't want to fall over myself as, I don't even want to think about it. Like, that should come second nature. So every single morning, I'd check out the rig, spot the roof of the firehouse, and I would just run up and run back down. And I would do that every single goddamn day, to the point where like I was sprinting up and sprinting down and didn't even think about it because I knew, and as I'm sure like obviously the ladder narrows as you get closer. So the spacing of the rungs and all that, like they change, and you got to know. So I was able to like basically, go backwards and know to the inch of where every rung was. And again, people were like, "Dude, that's crazy. Like, why?" I'm like, "No, man. Like, I'm that's the kind of minutia stuff. Like, and that's where I felt like I never was felt like I was stagnant because there's always another thing. Like, how can I sharpen it even more? Get that blade and sharpen it even more." And so, those. Again, running up the aerial, where every morning I after I was done with my DOT check out of the rig, I would just take one ladder, just one, didn't have to be crazy, just one ladder, like sling it out of the ladder tunnel, and I do like a high shoulder and pop it up, I bring it back down and I throw it in. So every day I was throwing at least one ladder, every automatic fire alarm that I'd run, this BS automatic fire alarms that never turn into fire, right? Although I've been to so many that have, every fire alarm. If we ran eight fire alarms that day, I was sticking the roof or sticking a window every single time. Maybe to the annoyance of some guys because it was around dinner time. I'm like, no, I'm laddering my damn building, and it made me really good at that. Like I could ladder a window within 30 seconds without. And over again. So just being able to, again, repetition, man, it's all about repetition. So anyway, so sorry, long story short, like I felt like I used that time to try to be the best that I could possibly be. And so I didn't want to, I didn't like, I had no desire. Like I was where I felt I needed to be. And then we ran some fires, and I was blessed to be in a bunch of incidents where we were to make grabs and make rescues off balconies and all those small little things that I did racing up the aerial. Like, man, I was like, this, there's something to this. Like, this is why I'm doing it. And when we would run these rescues, I'd be the one, racing up the aerial, and people would come like, "Holy shit, like how the hell did you?" I'm like, this isn't like a natural talent. This is me just being passionately curious of like, how can I make this better? How can I spot the aerial faster? How can I run up the aerial faster? How can I throw this ladder faster? All about just being faster. But as time evolved, I think as other officers would come and get detailed in and would be the truck boss for the day, and seeing maybe younger guys being the truck boss that didn't have the experience or time that I took to really marinate in these positions. Like maybe that was part of it. Like maybe I just started getting annoyed. Like, dude, you're a clown. Like, how are you the truck boss? Like, you have no business, being here, being the truck boss with zero experience on a truck. And maybe that I started getting a little bit jaded. Like, this is crazy. Like, and of course I found myself maybe complaining. And I'm like, well, either put up or shut up, either take it or then I need to do something about it. And that's where I was like, God, I guess maybe I need to take the lieutenant's test. I did that begrudgingly, but I think that was as I was seeing more folks in that position that I felt was so coveted as the truck company. Is such a for me such a specialized skill. Like, you really need to know what you're doing, especially with the limited resources we had. We only have 3 people on our truck companies, which is awful. And one of the reasons probably why I have so many damn injuries that I have over the years, because again, because I took the truck driver position so sacred, that I felt that I had to do the role of 3 different guys. I had to be the truck driver, the chauffeur, I had to be the outside vent guy, I had to be the roof guy, I had to be all these things, throw the ladders, operate the aerial, force doors in the back, or force exterior door, like. And I put that all on me. That again, one of the reasons where I felt like I just was never felt like I was stagnant. I was always trying to improve. But again, I think that was where it started clicking. Like, maybe I need to do this. Maybe I need to take this test. I can't keep complaining about the guys that are coming here. Maybe I need to make it better and be the guy on the other side as well.
Okay. All right. With that being said, what does leadership, especially in the company officer role, look like to you? What, in your opinion, what is leadership?
Leading by example, doing the shit job right alongside your men and women. Whatever it is that you're telling them to do, be willing to do it as well. I think leadership involves a lot of trust as well. And that trust it only takes years to maybe, or it takes a long time to develop, maybe, and moments to destroy. So being
Yes.
honest, also really taking your position seriously. And like, if you really take the position seriously as leader, as an officer, you have wakeless nights because of the tremendous responsibility that's on your shoulders, of like, these guys are relying on you to keep them safe to go home the next day. And I always keep that in the back of my mind, especially days where you're like, maybe you're tired and you're like, maybe I'll just not, maybe we won't do as much today, or whatever. Like, and second it in my mind of the tremendous responsibility you have. It's like, all right, what are we training on today? Or what are we getting into today? Or what are we learning about today? I know in the firehouse, a lot of times I bring up, like, try to do, like, on my calendar, I have significant events of line of duties throughout the years that the fire services had. So at our lineup, I'll look at my calendar. I guess most recently, Back Bay Fire, 2 Boston firefighters that were killed a couple years ago, Lieutenant Kennedy, and cannot believe I can't remember his other name. I went to his funeral. Anyway, so as these events come up and pop up on my calendar, like, I'll bring those events up during the day. At the very least, we'll talk about it and tactics, and hey, what led to the line of duty. And anyway, so as a leader, just always being engaged, always taking it seriously, and that you want to make these guys and gals as better, or as best as you can. trying to make them better than you are as well, not just as good as you, but better than you, because that's how we make the department better. There is a you got to fight through that complacency even as an officer when you come into work, like truly fighting the complacency and how easy it can be to maybe just take a day off, but taking that responsibility of making sure that the guys and gals are trained up and ready. There's a at company two, get it to mindset, right, as a leader to make sure that that mindset is instilled among your shift. The mindset of so there's a wooden piece at station two. It's been there for years since I started when I was a rookie, and it just says tonight could be the night, right? Take that seriously. Take that seriously. Tonight could be the night that your skills are tested. And I have family in that live in Montgomery County, so I literally have skin in the game.
Right.
It truly is impactful to me to make sure that my guys can pull a freaking line as quickly as possible, because it could be literally my family, that the houses they're putting out. Same thing when I teach this truck company operations class, and actually I said it in class just a couple weeks ago when we're talking about search and rescue, and we talk about the rescue survey. The guys that have done a phenomenal job of trying to quantify the data. Like, I need you guys to be able to search a room quickly, right? Gold standard numbers. The Book of Search. Have you heard or read the Book of Search? Like, that is awesome stuff with a lot of really good guys contributing to that book, and I'm incorporating that even as we speak into the truck program, and making sure that everyone has the right mindset and those time to task, and putting on your face piece or throwing ladders in a certain amount of time. All those things at the end of the day, like my niece and my nephew and my brother that live in Montgomery, like at the end of the day, it's going to be to their benefit and to the benefit of the community. And if you really love the community that you work with, then you're going to take this seriously and want to be better for them and want your company and the guys around you to be better for them if you really care about this job.
No, that's a fact. And one of the things too that I noticed you mentioned being a captain on a truck company, you're only riding three, which means the captain also has to put in the work. It's not just point and direct. You have to help with whatever needs to be done as well. So, to me, just because you have that title or that rank doesn't mean you can do less. And I
Oh my
think
God.
that's where we have some of that disconnect, where maybe there are some organizations that where they're riding four or five, and so yes, the company officer stands back, and those might be the individuals that are like, well, I can hide, but where you're at, there's no hiding.
There's no hiding. It's funny you say that, because I do feel like, and I'm an engine officer now, guys. I love my guys. I love my engine company. But if you're doing it right as a truck officer, or if you're on that, if you're doing it right and all the things that need to happen, you are toast by the end of that incident. You are toast, because there's so many things that need to happen. And again, I mentioned this trucks class. Like, I will argue that you need to be in more physically fit condition on the truck company than in any other position, especially if you're have less staffing, less than ideal staffing. Like, we had only three. Like, everybody's got to be engaged. Everybody. The officer has to be engaged. I don't have the luxury to just sit back and shine a flashlight and say, hey, hook here or let's force there. Like, we talk about like our tool complements and what we're bringing as a truck driver. I wanted to be self-sufficient, so I was the guy that, and there aren't too many of us, if any, in my department. I know it's a big thing in the West Coast, and it wasn't even a West Coast thing. It was just like I wanted to be self-sufficient, because I felt like I was always assuming the responsibilities of three people. Same thing with the truck officers. Like, you're where you are, you got to be multiple people as well. Like, you got to be part of that forcible entry team. You got to be part of the hook, right? You got to be all these things. And so, like, I would always have a striking tool with me. I had a ladder belt, and I just had a striking tool that would just hang on my hip, because I just wanted to have more hands, because I needed more hands to be able to do other things besides, just the hook and the Halligan. I wanted to have a striking tool with me. Same thing as a truck driver. I wanted to have as hands-free as I could, so I can just add an extra tool. But you had to be engaged. And unfortunately, and maybe the same thing in your department, when we would had detail, that's where I think part of it came, because I kept getting detailed officers on the truck, and they would always put the detailed officer on the truck because he can hide, right? If he's on the engine company and he messes up the water supply, the whole thing's gonna go to shit, right? And we're gonna burn down the house. But if you put him on the truck, it's I'm like, dude, I already have three. So now you're giving me a guy that doesn't know what he's doing, is hiding. Now it's just the two of us. The amount of fires I would go on that I truly felt was just me and my tillerman sucked, right? Like it just sucked. So it was more work on me and more work on my tillerman. Now, luckily, I had a solid group of guys. Being blessed to be with a solid group of truck guys on my shift was a blessing, because we were able to try to overcome those short challenges of the officers that would come and just hide and try to do as little as possible. Where, I had a core group of guys at, one of the guys' names, Matt Adams, John Merrill, Derek Buckley, Escalero, like just a Dave Braun. Anyway, I can keep going. Mike Murphy's. We had a core group of guys that we trained a lot. We had good camaraderie, good connection on calls, and we were able to overcome these short changes when these guys would come and hide and think that they didn't really have to do much, because, oh, I just come around and poke a couple holes in the walls or whatever, until the shit's on and people are trapped in a fire.
Right.
And that's when the truth will come out at one point of what actually, whether you care about this job and whether you're there to actually do it or whether you're there to actually hide. And it will rear its ugly head. And the truth will shine.
For sure. For sure. And unfortunately, sometimes the homeowner suffers or the citizen suffers. You know what I mean? Firemen will look at, well, the excuses will start to come out where it's like, at the end of the day, you need to look at yourself and go, did I do the best I could? And to me, it's all on that. That individual has to lay their head at night on their bed and tell themselves whether or not they did the best they could. They have to deal with that.
And we've had incidents in our own department that and we I cover them in trucks class. I don't just cover the rainbows and butterflies. Like I hit the guys that are in the classroom with some hard truths of when we failed to post, when we were not engaged and did not have disciplined aggression on what we had to do, when we didn't have the knowledge base of there was a fire a couple years back in Bethesda, and to the companies that were there, it was a fire on the front side. It was around Christmas time, and it looked impressive from the front side, but when you start hearing these words on the radio, like fully involved or heavy fire, I think it could give the wrong mindset to a lot of other companies coming in. Because, I mean, fully involved for me is like there's fire blowing out of every single space and every window, and this thing is just toast. That's not what they had. They had a lot of fire on the front side, and so when the first company came in, they started squirting water from the front side, and you could quickly tell that. It was, I think, the Christmas tree caught on fire in the front living room. So it was just the front side. But there was other truck companies and rescue squads that after the fire was out, like there was windows all the Bravo side, the Delta side, the Charlie side, with not even soot stains, not even smoke stains. And the where we failed to post was that at some point, a truck officer at some point should have looked at these windows and said, where's the searchable space? Not survivability, not where's the survivable space, because I'm not God. Where's the searchable space? Oh, that window that doesn't have fire coming out of it, then I should be searching that space. And unfortunately, there's a lot of people that fail to do that. Command officer can only make good tactical decisions on good information coming in. If they have good information come in, they can have good tactical decisions coming out. And unfortunately, there was even in that fire where the command officer initially was like, all right, this is going to be this next year attack, at least initially, but that never progressed into, hey, there's still a lot of spaces that we can search. And there was rescue squads and truck companies that were looking at these windows, and all they heard was the command officer saying, hey, this is going to be an exterior fire for now. You need to advocate for the truck company. You need to advocate for those trapped occupants, where they could have gone on the radio and just simply say, hey, truck X to command, this is what I'm seeing on the backside. I have no smoke coming out of these windows. We have searchable space. We're going to go up and search. And if the command officer knows that, then I more often than not, they're going to say, oh, okay, that's what you see on that Charlie side. Then cool. But no one ever said anything, and they just stood around in these windows, and two people perished just inside some of these windows, that no one ever really were engaged and had that discipline and had that aggression to be like, hey man, we need to do this. We need to have the mindset to be aggressive, to be disciplined, but to have that aggression to get on the radio and say, hey, this is what I see, this is what I'm going to do, and this is why I'm going to do it. And our at least in our own policies, we have an with all the policies we have an out for everything that that if we'd like to do to deviate from policy. And that's as long as it's defendable, communicated, and deliberate. If it's defendable, communicated, deliberate, there's a whole lot of things I can do that might be outside the norms or policies, as long as I can justify it. And me being able to look at a window and say, hey, there's not fire coming out of it, I'm going to do a search, is defendable, communicated, and deliberate. And that didn't happen. And a lot of it stems from we just didn't have the training in place for the organization, which I think we are going towards a much better space where this is in the forefront. We have a lot of good classes that we're starting to put out there, and being more aggressive and making sure that we are more proactive and a, you know, an interior search department.
Okay. When it comes to getting your organization to start looking at and adopting a truck company, whether it's truck company ops, truck company school, or allowing ladders to actually do ladder work, what's the best route, seeing how Montgomery now has that going for them? Because for me, it's all on delivery. You can't walk up in there and be like, we suck at this, and because nobody wants to hear that. But as far as I think the organization and the leaders need to understand, hey, if that the individual's bringing us data, bringing us facts, but I think too, they need to look at themselves and go, whoever the case may be, if whether if it's a captain, a chief, or a firefighter bringing it up, we don't know it all. We need to improve on this skill. So, how did you guys go about getting that done in Montgomery?
We had a lot of really bad incidents of victims that weren't found, delays in getting inside a structure, some really poor placed ventilation in general, or roof ventilation that went bad, and you start hearing a lot more chatter from the battalion chiefs like, hey, why did it take so long to force a door? Hey, why did they try to cut through this concrete roof? And you know, like all these things that were happening, people that again were found till after the fact, and it just kept coming up and coming to life, and it started re rearing its head. And you know, for some of us that were advocating for these things, we're like, all right, so where's the process to get better? Where's the class to learn how to search better aside from recruit school? Some of these guys haven't searched a room since recruit school. So how do you expect any of this to be better? Yeah, you're complaining. Some of these chief officers complaining about forceful entry and why it's taking as long as it's taking. Where's the forceful entry props? Where's the pathway for these guys to go? And although I had the luxury at the time, to go outside the organization, travel, maybe I had the luxury because I didn't have kids to spend more money. A lot of, you know, not all of us have that luxury to do that, right? So if we really care about this, we really care about trying to make our searches better, our ladders better, our force of entry better, all these things, then we need to invest in that internally. And so that kept getting brought up. I remember I would get calls or text messages from different command officers after fire, and they're like, "Dude, you wouldn't believe what I just saw here, like just atrocious truck work." I'm like, "Okay, what is the organization? What is the department doing to make that better?
Right.
Where is the pathway to train these guys to be better?" There is none. We had a class for many years, and it's still going on. It's called Aerial Apparatus Operator, and it's a complete garbage class. But it checks the box for promotional purposes that they need to take this class. And at some point they just started taking this class, they started offering this class just to fulfill a box, but it provided anything. And the aerial apparatus class is how to operate the outriggers and how to move the aerial, which is all well and good, but you had firefighters early in their career that were taking this class. They weren't ever going to touch a truck for many years, but they were just taking this class just to check a box so they can get their next promotional pay or promotional rank. But it absolutely did nothing, and still to this day does absolutely nothing for them. They might not know how to force a door, but they're on a turntable operating the controls on the aerial. It makes no sense, and everybody knows this, but there's policy and politics involved and all these other things. And this is what we were advocating for years. For 10 years, I was advocating, like, "Hey guys, we need to run a truck company operations class. Like, this is garbage. These classes are garbage. These people need to be able to practice search techniques. We need to be able to focus and advocate for truck skills if you guys want to make this better." And the battalion chiefs and his commanders are seeing this atrocious stuff. Then the department needs to hold themselves responsible as well with this happening. It's not just, although we do, there's a balance. I think that as firefighters, we are responsible to, like, making ourselves better, right? To do what we can to make ourselves better. But the department has to, they have to provide some support as well. Again, going back to, like, we might not all have the luxury to drop $2,000 to go to FDIC with hotels and all these other things. Like, we don't. So let's do what we can here to make that better. And again, I'm a persistent bastard, and I would not let it go. And I would bring it up every time, and I, shoot off emails to chiefs, and maybe circumventing the chain of command sometimes, is because I would calls that we would run, that there was civilians that were not being given the best chance of survival because of the lack of training that we had. And every time that would pop up, I'd hit them hard and say, "Hey, this just happened last week. Where's our process to make us better? There is none. So let's work on that." And I just keep hitting them over and over and over again. Again, so we had our first trucks class last March. And the first class, because it was new and because it wasn't, might get a little complicated. Aerial apparatus fulfills a promotional process, and it also gives you the requirement that's needed to be a truck driver. So this aerial apparatus is satisfying two different things at the same time. Truck company operations class, which is what I wanted to run, only satisfies the promotional process. But you still have to take aerial ops to be a truck driver. So people were taking the path of least resistance by taking this crappy class that satisfies two rather than the trucks class that they really should be taking to fucking be better. But people didn't want to do that because then they would still have to, "Oh man, now I got to take a second class. Why do I want to do that?" So the first class I ran in March, there were nine people that signed up in the class. Only nine. Barely filled it. Barely filled it. And they were going to cancel it, and they're like, "Oh, just, I was like, let's just run it. Let's just run it. If I just run it, and maybe I'll start taking thick pictures and video." And we ran it, and the guys that took the class loved the class. I started posting it as much as I could on my Instagram and posting in videos. And then when we ran it again in fall, there was 30, 40 people on a wait list trying to get into this class because they saw that this was actually a worthwhile class, that they were actually able to do some really cool shit and be better and break shit and enforce shit and breach stuff. And now every time, I shouldn't say every time, it's only been 3 times, but last 2 times have been full classes with people still sitting on wait lists just to try to get into this class because they see the value in it. And the department sees are starting to see the value in this. And just to end this part of it is one of the lieutenants, actually Lieutenant Buckley, that used to tiller behind me years ago, told me actually just 2 days ago, which is the best compliment, best thing I could have ever heard. It fills my heart that one of the guys that took the trucks class, took my trucks class, had a grab not too long ago. Those grabs don't come every day. He made a grab, had a save, and after that, he attributed that not only obviously a lot of things that come into play and what department, what company you're with, how aggressive the guys are, all those things, but he also attributed being able to practice these skills in the trucks class that he took only months before. The stuff that he was able to, the reps that he was able to get in through trucks class, and then like 4 or 5 months later, he's making a grab. This goes directly into it. It only age, experience, fat, healthy, all those things will only get you so far. But at the end of the day, it's when was the last time you practiced that skill? Period. Period. End of story. When was the last time you got the reps in to actually do it? Man, that is a prime example. Homeboy just got out of truck school, and a couple months later, boom, he gets a grab. And he said he felt more comfortable. He felt, more knowledgeable. He felt more aggressive in being able to do those things. Like, man, if that isn't a hit in the face as to why it is that we should be doing these things, I mean, that's it right there. That is it right there. And that is the best damn compliment and gives me more fire in my belly to keep grinding at this thing, because it's not an easy class to teach either. I mean, it's a ball buster for all of us, that guys that are going through the class, guys that are teaching this class. But those, again, as I mentioned before, those are some of the best classes that you take when you're sore, your knees are just about worn through because you actually did something that was difficult, but man, it made you better.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome. It's I think if any individual out there that's listening to this episode wants to approach their organization on like, hey, we because I'd probably say a good majority of departments are understanding of what engine company culture is. You need the right type of hose, nozzle, then you need to figure out how you're going to lay it out, your stretch, but engine work, and I'm not trying to say engine work is like child's play, but stretch your line, find the fire, put the fire out. With search and ladder work, it's all right, throw the ladder. Got to look at the angle. Am I going to need another ladder due to the pitch? Okay, where am I going to cut the hole? How am I going to cut the hole? Who's
Where am I
gonna
going to start first?
where am I going to start first? Who's doing what? Who's cutting? Who's poking through? Like there are so many different things. So I say that to say, if you are going to approach your organization on that, one of the key things for me is the organization or the leader or whoever it is needs to be honest with themselves and go, are we doing this right? Like, are we who we say we are when it comes to the public? And that the whole thing of when was the last time you practiced that skill, it can't be the day 911 drops your tones and you're going to a legit call. Like practice the training, get good at it. But unfortunately, we have so many people who think they will rise to the level of the occasion when the tones and when the bell hits. And that's just not the fact. That is not the key. You're gonna look bad doing the skill. And
I couldn't agree more. Again, I'm currently teaching the trucks class now, and we detail truck companies up to help support the class, either with aerial or with the tools or whatever. I saw two glaring differences just in the truck companies that came up just within the last couple of classes within the past 2 weeks. One truck company came up. The officer was engaged, was with me, was helping me. Captain Jason Smith, which he was on with you, he's helped me with building this class up as well. He's been supportive of that. He's been supportive of me trying to get this class up and has contributed. But there's a difference between, the companies that come up and are like, oh, we're detailed. This sucks. And then they go and hide and sit on the chair somewhere in the academy. And that's one, company that, oh, well, I have 20 years on the job. I got 25 years. Why do I need to do this? And then I had another company, just yesterday they came, the detailed truck that came up, and all those dudes were like seething and watching and were engaged and going skill to skill and even just watching and trying to maybe get in a cut here or there or wanted to see how things were happening or just listening to the instructors. Like they were, engaged and wanting to just maybe just even if you just slip, trip, and fall into learning something, but be put yourself in a position to do so. But just such a going to your point of different mindsets of like, hey, do we really need to do this? We've always done this. We know how to do this. Versus the guys were like, man, I wonder if there's just a better way or a faster way to do this. Let me just be in the space of other dudes and gals and see if we can do this better and be better as a truck company. Man, if you want to be a better truck company, when was the last time you did it? When was the last time you practiced it? You think you're good? Go faster. Go faster. And then see how good that skill is. And then you think you got it down? All right. Go faster. Right? Just keep pushing yourself. If you think that throwing a ladder is not a big deal or anybody can do it. Yeah, everybody can do it, but not everyone can do it well. And until the shit hits the fans, right? So we even forceful entry again, a lot of times people might think, oh, it's just it's inward outward, no big deal. We start putting even just a couple days ago, like we start putting speakers on either side of these guys as they're running through the forceful entry training, and we start confining them a little bit more. And I'm blasting. We had these Bluetooth speakers that we mount, and I'm blasting at the highest volume music. Everything from like, what was I playing? Like everything from like hip hop to R&B to whatever. They get thrown all this stuff, and I'm just blasting in their ears as a forcing. I'm, ba you know, we're banging, we're making noise on the metal as they're actually forcing through these doors, just trying to, trying to make it. Trying to fight through, literally fight through the noise and so many things of like trying to focus on what you're doing, like such a basic skill. And then you start adding all these other outside components to it to like increase your stress level to try to get your adrenaline up because you got to fight through that adrenaline as you're doing this, these skills. So again, oh yeah, it's just inward. I'll just put the ads in and I'll pop the door. All right. Start making it more stressful for you. And it's a whole different ball game. Whole different ball game with all these other noises. So I guess my point is there's even basic skills that you can find ways to make it harder, more stressful for you because as you know, the fire ground is not sterile. So if you're throwing a ladder and it's sterile on a flat surface and it's sunny outside and oh, I can do it, man, that doesn't mean shit. Find a hard place to do it. Find a way to stress yourself out. Have the guys around you just watching, man. Even just having guys just watching while you're throwing the ladder, it's like, I don't want to fuck up. I don't want to fuck up. You know what I mean? Like, even all those things really help to fight through your own anxiety as you're doing it. That all may makes a huge impact. We had a, and I shared this with the guys to drive that home. 2 years ago, we had a building explosion. And we made a bunch of rescues. Proud of the hell of the guys that were on that call. The people were jumping out of windows, and we made a grab from one of the upper level apartments. But I still remember the stairwell was compromised. Shit was falling on top of us. There was fire just behind us. And I remember I was trying to force the store. I was a lieutenant at the time on a tower company. The bar guy that was with me, Kale Latchaw, and I remember forcing the store. And there was a lady trapped inside that, and the building was falling, literally falling around us. But I still remember hearing the noises, feeling the hearing floors collapsing. Kale was like, "Hey man, it's getting hot. I'm starting to get burned right behind me. We're hearing stuff fall." Like, man, obviously I can't recreate that moment for
Right.
people, but I want to stress how important it is for us to try our damnedest to increase the stress level while we're doing a skill. Like, I'm actively trying to force the store. All these other things were happening around me all the same time. So when I say, like, try to fight through the noise, literally try to fight through that noise to focus on what it is that you're doing to try to do it well. Again, can you do it well in a sterile environment? Okay, cool. Can you do it well in the most chaotic environment? Man, that's where you start upping the level of your game, being able to fight through this. This is where we start injecting those noises and the music and the trying to just make it as noisy as possible when you're trying to make these when you're trying to do these basic skills to try to level up your skill while you're doing it.
Back. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
In your opinion, what does the term aggressive mean to you?
Aggressive. I say this a lot as I'm doing training classes, disciplined aggression. Disciplined aggression. I think aggression applied correctly is a great thing. It keeps that razor sharp, that edge sharp by pushing forward, but being disciplined enough to know what it is that you're actually doing, not just being bullheaded and just, jumping into a window and not having any thought process or training or anything like that, but being aggressive enough to want to be the one that's doing it. Like, I remember when I was a truck driver, if I was the first two truck, man, that was my fucking roof. That door, that's my door to force. That's mine. That all those truck skills was something like I want to do. I wanted to be aggressive enough to be like the first one to do it. Like, if the roof had to be cut, I wanted to be first one cut. If that door was going to be forced, if we had to force that door, I wanted to be the one that wanted to cut that, force that door to be able to get those reps in, to be aggressive enough to be the one that wants to be the first one through the door, to make an impact. I think aggression applied correctly, can make huge positive impacts for us on the fire ground. Again, I add discipline because you should be disciplined enough to be educated enough of what you're doing, disciplined enough to know, the building construction of what it is that's happening to that building, disciplined enough to get the training for searching and all these other things, to get these outside classes, to be able to channel that aggression correctly. I think aggression could be a phenomenal thing applied correctly with backed with knowledge. If it's backed with knowledge, that aggression could be an amazing thing and a positive impact for the community, especially when shit's hitting the fan and people are trapped in fire. They're going to want that disciplined aggressive firefighter, not the one that's taking their time and to both get there and to get to the down and dirty skills that need to happen on the fire ground.
Love it. Disciplined aggression.
Yeah.
Okay. I'm with it. I'm with
Yeah.
it. Let's see here. I want to ask you. I lost my question. It's right in front of me. Okay. Realistic training. What kind of, with you being a company officer, what are some skills or some little training sessions you try to give to your guys? Because we all know not a lot of departments are seeing fires every day or every week. So what little things do you do here and there to try to bring a little realism to your cruise?
I mean, it certainly could be a challenge for sure to try to get that realism injected in to the company level, for sure. Like, a lot of times, unofficially, there's sometimes neighbors that will come and say, "Hey, I'm about to demo a house or whatever. Hey, I'm gonna I bought the land and there's an old house if you want to come around and do something." And although officially we gotta contact the department, we have to go through the processes, and honestly, a lot of times in the past, like by the time we go through the red tape, like the house is on the ground. It happens all the time. It became frustrating, and so unofficially, like I even to this day, I'm willing to take the lumps if it meant that I can provide some kind of realistic training to my guys. And at the very least, we'll go to these houses and we'll throw some ladders. We'll get into the building. Again, just small those small things of like transitioning in and out of a window is can be a lost art because everyone's focused on like throwing the ladder, throwing the ladder, throwing the ladder. I'm like, oh, what happens afterwards, right? So what can we do afterwards to do those transitions to be better? Just climbing the ladder. I mean, climb a goddamn ladder, run up a ladder, and see if you fall on your face or not. So I do try to be aware of houses around that we can at least do some basic level of training that can be more realistic of even just sloped grounds around a house can be more realistic. Like, when was the last time you threw a ladder on a hill? Not just on
Flat
a asphalt
surface.
surface, right? Like those things are humbling if you haven't done those before. Again, and this is just basic throwing ladders, right? But it could get complicated really quickly. If you're really thinking about those things, and at the firehouse, we do a lot of like mask up drills, we do like competitions, and guys that work with me at Company Two know that we'll put like our times on the board and who's gonna be the fastest time, and just doing that kind of stuff, buddy breathing, and zero visibility. But it's definitely a challenge. I think the biggest thing where I think it matters the most is just keeping your ear low to the ground to find some of these houses that we can try to use our equipment in and around a house rather than just in the firehouse.
Last question I always like to ask the guests. It's kind of a deep one for some. They're like, damn, where do you come up with that? Where do you see yourself? Where would you like to see yourself before you decide to hang it up?
I always saw myself riding off, it's like that cowboy movie when the cowboy gets on a horse and just rides off into the sunset, and that majestic scene, as the sun is going down, and take away the horse and the cowboy and add me and a truck company in it riding off into the sunset. That's where I've always seen myself of wanting to like just be the truck boss and riding off into the sunset on a busy truck company. That's where my love and passion has always been. That's where I've always seen myself. Unfortunately, then reality kind of punches you right square in the face. When your body doesn't want to cooperate with this picture this amazing picture I had in my mind. I just came off of a shoulder injury. I tore my rotator, my bicep, my labral on my right shoulder. I was off for a number of months, and just got back to full duty in this past January. And I 100% attribute all this to like really crappy staffing levels from my department. Being a three-person truck company for all these years, I know for a fact my body is probably broken because of that, because I wanted to leave it all on the fire ground. Like, I wanted to be gassed when I was done because I left it all on the field, and I can retire feeling that I've always left it all on the fire ground. I gave it everything I had in my, I've had blown ACLs and blown I've had multiple surgeries in the past, because I'm I'm leaving it all there. But so anyway, so my body recently has not been as cooperative as I would like it to have been. I had a TFCC tear, which a wrist injury where they had to do like called an ulna shortening. They had cut into my ulna and had to short. I mean, I've had two major injuries and surgeries just in the past 2 years, which sucks because what happens when you start getting older. So taking the body out of it, I still see that. I still want to see that. I still maybe hope to see that someday of retiring on a truck company, a busy truck company. But I got to balance that with quality of life. I got to balance that with making sure that as my wife says, she doesn't want to push me in a wheelchair in retirement. And and I got little kids that I need to make sure that they have a functioning daddy dad as they get older. So trying to see what that means for me, whether it's, and I can't believe I'm even saying it out of my mouth, because up until probably 2 years ago I would have said absolutely not. Being a battalion chief, like maybe I damn am I going to be. So I got to take that battalion chief's test, a lot. I have a lot of really good battalion chiefs that I respect. I think maybe you might have even had some Chief Sam Bolani. That is my homeboy right there, and he was actually my lieutenant at Company 16 when I was a truck driver there years ago. That is a fireman's fireman. Anyway, a lot of these battalion chiefs I respect that are battalion chiefs now. And fell under similar circumstances where they're like, man, just for my body, my longevity, I want to keep doing this, but maybe I can use my passion for the job in a different way. And maybe it's, maybe it is taking that battalion chief's test, and doing it that way, and hopefully contributing in that way. But I don't know. It's re again recently it's starting to maybe morph into something, a different mindset than maybe what I would have thought.
Okay. All right. And like I said, it's all on the guest. So there's no rebuttal, there's no questions. But no, like you said, we all have some sort of goal or ending we would like to get to. But with life and how life works, it's not always going to be the case. So I 100% agree with you and your body and, like getting older. I've said it before, and I've heard people say, well, that's not true, but I think it's true. When it comes to the fire service, it is a young man and women's game. Yes, as you get older, you can do what you can for physical fitness, but your body just doesn't recuperate the way it does 10, 20 years ago.
100%. 100%, man. I remember when I first got on job, I was a rookie, and Jerry Graham, Graham was my first captain. Big bear. I mean, dude had like bear hands. Just a big dude. But I remember him getting into the engine, and he was like, he grabbed the grab handle, and he like pulled himself up, and he was like, is he getting into the engine? I was 19, 20 years old. I was like, what the hell, man? All he's doing, I'm thinking, man, he's just getting on the engine, and he's like making all these noise. Like, what the hell? This is crazy. Ain't nothing to this. Yeah, 25 years later, of getting on that at the, on that unit, on that truck company, on the rescue squad, on the engine. Yeah, I'm that dude now. I'm getting up, I'm like, oh my God, because I got bulge discs now, and all these other things, and my knee hurts, from ACL surgery and all these other things. I'm like, God damn it, even those small little things, it wears you, like literally all your tendons and ligaments, all those things, man. There's a shelf life, and you only get so
Absolutely.
many reps in them. And
That's right.
again, my mind though is like, still want to get it, still want to get some, I still want to run those fires. I just I'm temporarily signed to as a safety officer just within the past couple of weeks. But I got back to full duty, like I mentioned, in January, and we ran a really good fire actually a couple weeks ago. My first fire after coming back, first due fire, basement fire, had one trapped, 15-year-old trapped in the basement, another one trapped on the first floor. Had a lot going on, and I was, I'm like, man, got my Super Bowl in off the jump just a couple weeks after coming back to work, bro. For 2 days, I could not move. I came home, and it felt like I was run over by a bus. I could not believe how sore I was after fire. It was incredible. Like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, we, on certain days when I was on truck, like we would run like four jobs in a day. It didn't happen all the time, but when it did, I was
Right.
like, my God, this is amazing. Dude, I
Right.
was coming right back into it like two shifts, a shift later, and I was right now, like running something like that. Oh my goodness. I run one and it's like, what in the hell? But you know what? I'm still in the gym every day. I'm still,
Right.
I'm trying to make sure I'm keeping up with the young bucks on a shift, and they know I'll be right behind them, hard charging right behind them. The captain's going to be right there with them. Because I take physical fitness seriously. I think that is critical in anything we do, especially if you want to be a good officer. You have to be right there with them. You have to, got to be leading them, leading
Yep.
them from the front. So if anything, as you get older, man, even being physically fit is even more important. I could have gotten away with, even though I always, physical fitness for me was always a important thing in my career. And I used to do Firefighter Combat Challenge. I don't even know if that's still around, Firefighter Combat Challenge. We had a Firefighter Combat Challenge team in all these competitions and being fit. I could get away with like not working out for a couple months and still be fine. Now, man, like I have to put in the work on the Stairmaster. I have to put in the work on the treadmill. I got to put in the work in the gym and lifting weights and all those things just to overcome that age and try to overcome those things that just naturally come with doing this for long. So anybody's want, listening, man, it's keep at it and keep physical fitness is one of the high priority lists, and if you want to keep doing this for sure.
No, that's a fact. That is definitely a fact.
Yeah.
Franco, I want to say thank you, man. I appreciate you coming on. I know we had to reschedule it twice, but we got it done. I
Yeah.
truly want to say thank you. Thank you for your mindset. Thank you for how you view the fire service. Thank you for the fact that you're a company officer. It's not just point direct talk on the radio. Go, guys. It's no, I have to do what I'm expecting them to do. And I think
100%.
we have company officers that are some that lose that mindset where it's like, I just point direct, you do all the grunt work. Like, in a
Yeah.
sense, if you can do that in your organization, cool. But to the firefighters watching you, that's not the way it needs to be. But I just want to say, I appreciate you for being you, very passionate, very vocal when it comes to the fire service. Some people may not like what you're saying, but some people also need to take a look in the mirror and
Yeah.
realize and do a little self-reflection. So I just want
Yeah,
to say
absolutely.
thank you for coming on, for talking.
No. Yeah, no, I appreciate it, man. This was a lot of fun. It's always fun to be around the kitchen table at the firehouse and just talk shop, and amazing how much you can learn just to BS with one another and feel like you're not the only one, right? That
That's the thing
that
right
you are
there.
not alone. You are not alone, right? Like happens all over the country. You're not alone with some of these challenges and some of the things, some of the mindsets that you have, and to feel like you're not crazy.
Yes. Thank you. I appreciate
Yeah.
it.
Yeah, bro. Absolutely. Thank you.
If any of the listeners out there are or know of a great firefighter who embodies the principles of being a great communicator, goal-oriented, hardworking, humble, passionate, and professional, regardless of rank, career, or volunteer, contact me at studentofthegamefirepodcast@gmail.com. Until next time, stay focused, stay committed, and stay safe.